When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Where are the drones coming from? Where are they being made? Where's the command and control infrastructure? Kill those people. So it's like the drone stuff allows people to be half pregnant, right? Kind of dip your toe in the water and not really commit a lot until somebody on either side goes, all right, we got to end this shit.
Let's go.
Welcome to Citizen. We've got a special guest today, Matthew Wiz Buckley. You were in the Navy. You were a Top Gun guy. I don't know if you know. Did you see that Jared Taylor and his band put out a new version of Danger Zone last week?
I did. I'm actually going. Oh my God, it was awesome. I'm actually going to change the beginning of my podcast because I use one of his songs right now. So I'm going to change the intro to mine to that song. I loved it, man. Wait, they're good.
You're using one of Jared's songs?
I am.
Which song is it?
I forget. I knew you were going to ask me that, man. I forget which song. When I first started like 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
I should know. Obviously, we've done some really goofy shit over the years. I don't know how serious your show is, but like some of the stuff is serious, some of it's not. So.
Sure.
Yeah. Before we get into all this, because there's a lot to talk about today, give me your background. Where'd you grow up? How did you end up in the military?
Yeah, man. Poor Irish, or middle-class Irish Catholic kid from I have a brother and three sisters that were born in South Philadelphia. And then my parents hopped on the Atlantic City Expressway and moved down to South Jersey, the Jersey Shore. The good one, not the MTV one. And me and my little sister were born in South Jersey. So kind of raised down there. And then growing up, Irish Catholic altar boy type of kid. All boys, Catholic high schools. Thanks, Mom and Dad. And, always taught service above self. Lived on the beach, loved the ocean. So always knew I wanted to go into the Navy. Had some trauma growing up. Lost a sister to a drunk driver when she was 19 and, kind of changed the arc of my life. So I decided to escape to the United States Navy. Was always interested in aviation. So kind of like a Reese's peanut butter cup, boat, aviation, always knew I wanted to fly for the Navy. So, ended up going down to school, down here in Florida, NROTC, and then got commissioned in the Navy. Oh man, back in 1991.
Wow.
At the end of the Cold War. Yeah, wow. I'm old.
The second largest Air Force in the world is the United States Navy. That's pretty funny. Like, whatever, there's a lot of doomsday people that are concerned about Russia, although nobody should be taken seriously if they're concerned about Russia being a threat to us. But China is always something that comes up. It's like, yeah, I mean, right. when they have... two independent fleets of Gen 5 fighters and bombers, then I'll fucking care about China. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's doing a ground invasion anymore of anything. So what's your perspective? I mean, our air superiority, like, that's the one thing. I remember we've done so many shows with Tim Kennedy over the years, but one of them we did back in 2017, he made the point that the modern combat vet American combat vet doesn't know what it's like to deploy without air superiority, right? We've always had it. So what are your thoughts on like the coming conflicts or whatever and how we're positioned versus other countries?
China's obviously the biggest threat, and they steal everything that isn't nailed down. Mm-hmm. And even if it's nailed down, they'll steal it. The Joint Strike Fighters, all the stuff for that's been stolen. China just, you know, our ballistic missile submarines, they just copy and paste. So good on them in a sense. So they're not going to do it on their own. They're just going to steal from us. And who said this, Lenin or what, you know, I forget, my military training, quantity has a quality of its own, right? And as you alluded to, Russia ain't kicking anybody's ass anytime soon, mainly because they're just ground down in Ukraine. But there's something to be said for fighting an enemy that just doesn't give a shit about human life, right? They just throw wave after wave at you, kind of like there's a quadrillion Chinamen. So that quantity has me concerned. And as you alluded to, the technology is stolen and they can rapidly make anything that we're making and just kind of change it a little bit. So pretty starting to get really concerned about our position, especially with respect to China. You've probably seen some of the war game results that have leaked over the past couple of years. And, you know, we're losing a carrier. If we try to defend Taiwan, we're losing a carrier battle group easily. You know, or a carrier carrying 5,000 Marines and sailors, Guam, Okinawa, all those airfields kind of cratered right away. It would be ugly. And I forget what the computer projections were on American deaths. So it's ugly, bro. I lie awake at night wondering what the hell's going to happen, and let alone the fact that we can't even hit our recruiting goals. And if you can't hit the ball over the net, lower the net. So we're getting a lot of substandard folks in the military. So China keeps me awake at night. Russia, not so much. But the other potential big threat is India, bro. They got some serious state-of-the-art fighter aircraft, and they're coming on pretty strong. So the world's getting to be a really dangerous place, and I think we're kind of lagging. As we're seeing in Ukraine, what really keeps me up at night is drones. Drone warfare is horrifying, right? And, you know, you got to hand it to the Houthis. They're running us out of weapons, man. So we have Navy destroyers in the Red Sea shooting down $1,000 drones with $1 million missiles. So this doesn't, the math ain't working out. So,
well, that's kind of been the case through the duration of the GWAT, right? Like we spend a ton of money to fight people that have no money, basically
living in caves.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, that doesn't seem like, that doesn't seem like a very good return on investment, to be honest. Like a lot of people have said over the last, 20, 25 years that instead of doing what we did, plussing up, expanding recruiting, lowering standards for volume for quantity, we should have focused more on special operations and stuff like that to root people out. But I don't know that I don't know that there is a way to successfully fight an insurgency like that, right? Like this has been going on for decades, and it's not going to stop anytime soon. Even the news coming out of Israel recently is like. Yeah, we can seriously degrade the military capability of Hamas, but we'll never get rid of them. So what exactly is the goal? Like that to me, it seems like focusing only on a military option is probably myopic, right? And it's not going to work.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, the more the enemy, Secretary of Defense Austin has been a little hot water today, but a couple of weeks ago about Israel, he's like, well, you know, I've warned Israel and Charlie Brown, the new chairman, Joint Chiefs. They both said, well, you know, we keep telling Israel, if you keep killing Hamas, they're going to hate you more. I'm like, huh? That's breaking news that the more of your enemy you kill, they're going to hate you more. So it's a great point that, you know, it's not only a military solution. Right. But man, when you're coming to Hamas, Hezbollah, or some of the folks out to the right of Israel in Syria, it's in their culture, right? I mean, the kids in school, there ain't no Israel. They're taught from an early age to hate Israel and to wipe them off the planet. I mean, hell, we give money to the PLA, who gives money to Hamas terrorists who die or martyrs, right? So they get a pension. So it's a self-licking ice cream cone of horror, and it's not getting better anytime soon. So I don't know what the answer is, man, but the drone has really leveled the playing field against our aggressors, right? We're zipping around in however much they cost. I don't know, $300 million F-35s, as the Houthis are causing like half the world shipping to go around the Horn of Africa, right? And with $1,000 drones. And here are ships trying to shoot these things down with million-dollar missiles. It just, something's got to change, and something's got to change rapidly. I read a report. This was before drones were like they are right now. You can, you know, drone swarm things. This, right. I think it was an admiral, whoever it was. He wrote a report that said drone warfare will make war more likely and more horrible. And here's what he was getting at is, you know, in the old days, you know, when I was going into flight school, there's Jeffrey Zahn, H6BN, shot down Desert Storm, getting shit kicked out of him on CNN. So there he is, you know, there's our air crew eaten up. There's a British Tornado pilot who's all, you know, fucking black and blue from getting beaten. So, of course, the politicians say, you know what? We don't want a whiz shot down. You know, it's a lot of money, blah, blah. Why don't we just start sending drones? Well, at the end of the day, okay, hey, we lost a drone. It got shot down. Okay, send some more. So at the end of the day, if it's drone v. drone, nobody's really getting having any pain inflicted on them. It's, as you know, bro, at the end of the day, it's caveman. Go pick up a rock and you got to smash somebody's skull in. Yeah. So where are the drones coming from? Where are they being made? Where's the command and control infrastructure? Kill those people. So it's like the drone stuff allows people to be half pregnant, right? Kind of dip your toe in the water and not really commit a lot until somebody on either side goes, all right, we got to end this shit. So it's the drone stuff. It keeps me awake at night, but it's also it's not kind of warfare if nobody's getting hurt, so to speak.
Yeah, but that's only a matter of time, right? Like like imagine everybody had. Every country had a robot army, like you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. The only way to win that is to destroy all the other guys. But like in a normal fight, and let's take it back to like melee fights and stuff. A unit gets routed and they fucking retreat, and that's the end of that fucking fight, right? That's not going to happen with robots. They're just going to fight until the bitter end, and then what happens, right? What happens? What's the enforcement mechanism to inflict the will of the winner over the loser after the winners or after the losers' robots or drones or whatever are gone, right? That like the carnage begins after that.
Correct. That's exactly right. You nailed it. Yep. Yeah. There's until you hit where the drones are coming from or they're made or where they're commanded from, it's everybody's kind of half pregnant. So it was a great report, man, because I'm like, wow, it actually makes more war likely because it's initially at the beginning, it's more antiseptic. It's a bunch of people sitting in air conditioned rooms. I had a buddy years ago. He was a drone. He got furloughed after 9/11, went into the air. Navy guy went into the Air Force. Went and visited him in Vegas because he was a drone guy out, you know, flying a drone on the other. He's like, we went to Crazy Horse, whatever it was, man. We're at a local folk dancing establishment. He's like, dude, about an hour ago, I just smoked a cave full of guys, saw them disintegrate. And now here I am getting a lap dance. It's just, he's like, I don't know what's going on. So warfare is certainly rapidly changing and it ain't for the better.
Yeah,
warfare can change for the better, you know.
Yeah, I'm glad we talked about that because it kind of leads into some of the other stuff I wanted to discuss, which is the broader culture, societal decay that we're experiencing right now, and the severe disconnect between effort and outcome that we now have. Right, it's like imagine the attitude of a wild, like a bobcat versus a house cat. The expectation of sustenance and shelter and all this stuff without the expectation of having to work for it and
effort.
Like in the animal kingdom, I don't know that we've seen it. Well, I guess we have seen it actually in humanity. In the animal kingdom, you'll see, and we've seen this with the transition over the past couple thousand years from dire wolves into dogs, right? And all the different species of dogs.
Correct.
And it's not just dogs, by the way, it's cats, all kinds of other animals, pigs, the more domesticated they come, and this is just how nature works, the more domesticated they come, their features become softer, they become less aggressive and less violent and less capable of doing violence as well. Not just less prone to violence, but also less capable of doing violence. And I look at humanity, and the average 21-year-old male in America right now has the same testosterone level that a 65-year-old had in 2000, right? So we, like, the 77% of the male population in the United States is not qualified for military service physically.
Correct.
So 3/4 of our fucking population can't serve.
Correct.
So this is, we have become a nation of house cats, and we're fighting people who survive on less than $2 a day and, and believe in something enough to die for it. Right. Yep. This is incompatible. Well, these two groups are, like, the only reason we are even competitive right now is because of our wealth. That's the only reason.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And technology. And as we just alluded to, you know, we got a $100 million F-35 zipping around that can eventually have the same impact as some drones that they bought at Radio Shack. I think, you know, one of the things we have to really worry about right now with today's military is the fact that a generation raised to hate themselves and their country will never defend it. Period. That's just not going to happen. Kids today are taught to hate who they are, hate who their body is, especially if they're a certain color, being white, or, you know, and hate this country. We're a bunch of colonized or whatever that word is. But yeah, so I'm terrified of what's going to come. I got two boys. My oldest graduated from Norwich University up in Vermont. He was in the Corps of Cadets, wanted to go in, and I'm doing my best to dissuade him. My middle son, Jack, is going to Colorado. He's in NROTC right now, and I think he's about to punt. I just read an op-ed the other day in the Wall Street Journal about an Army helo dude in Erbil on Christmas Day, drone strike. Took some fragments in the neck, and now he hasn't woken up. He's like a vegetable. So what are we waiting for in the Middle East? We're waiting for somebody to die. I don't want to be a parent sitting here having my sons be bullet sponges or drone sponges. So I don't know too many veterans, man, and I know a ton of veterans who are telling their kids to go into the military. The number one, as you know, the number one recruitment source for the United States military legacy, for generations has been you and I.
Yeah,
that's a great deal, and it's awesome. Hell, man. I see, obviously, you know, with my foundation and stuff, I see how veterans are treated. You know, once the military does a great job of turning us into humans that can do some pretty horrible things to another human being. And then when they're done with us, they do a pretty shitty job of transitioning us back to being a human.
Right.
You know, here's a couple days of how to write a resume and wear a coat and tie. And let me turn you back on civilization. So, man, I could not be, you know, I'm a traitor, so I'd say bearish. I could not be more bearish on the world right now and what's going on in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd that we see the only option seems to involve military, like international military force of some sort, in the Middle East especially. It's like, there are other options, like shut down what Trump did, for example, the racist Muslim ban or whatever the fuck it was. Like, no, I mean, like, these countries have, including Saudi Arabia, by the way, we shouldn't let one motherfucker from that country into our country. 82, I think, or 83% of the primary education facilities there are madrasas, which is death to America. The same shit from quote-unquote Palestine, which is
Death to Israel, death to the U.S.
Yep. It's like, this is pervasive. Lebanon, Syria, pretty much every non-rich Muslim country, and then a lot of the wealthy people in the rich countries are on that tip. It's like, we need to shit or get off the pot, I think, right? Either a full-blown military assault, like take down the Ottoman Empire again and fucking put that shit under rule, or ban them from coming here. Those are the only two options, I think. And I don't think there's anything, there's nothing to be gained by trying to take over the world. I don't think that's a good idea. So I wonder what your, like, I have this conversation with people that come on all the time. Veterans, especially who have kids, is like, I ask them, would you tell your kid to join? Cause I fucking wouldn't. There's no way.
No.
Cause we don't even have, even through the GWAT, we never had a clearly defined goal. Nobody ever articulated what success looked like in Iraq or Afghanistan. And now it's just like, we're back to the 90s, right? With Clinton, where we're just kind of bombing here and bombing there and stirring shit up and just making more enemies for no fuck, with no plan to ever address that issue.
You know, it's funny, bro. I remember, you know, like I said, I was a mid 90s guy in the Navy too, flying Operation Southern Watch, no fly missions. And I remember Clinton, I forget what Saddam did, but Clinton's like, oh man, I have to do something, right? And I remember it was a cruise missile strike in the middle of the night. And Nancy Pelosi and all these other Democrats were like, well, it shows that he's a compassionate guy. I'm like, do you know who you killed at the 3rd Air Defense Headquarters at night? You killed the janitors, man. You killed the night crew in these buildings that were empty. If you wanted to do something, it would have been at noon when they were outside taking a smoke break. So when people bring up Clinton, I'm like, okay. Yeah. So
well, that
was comical.
Those airstrikes were because of Saddam gassing the Kurds. That's why we did that. So he gassed the Kurds and we killed a bunch of poor people.
Exactly. Like, and made them hate us even more, right? So you brought up 9/11 or you brought up Saudi Arabia. Let's go back to 9/11. I've never understood this. So my first and last day at work at American Airlines was the morning of 9/11, man. I was packing for my trip. My wife came in. She's like, you better come out and look at the TV. You know, airplane hit the World Trade Center. I'm like, I'm busy, woman. Probably small airplane, bad weather. And went out there, saw the big smoking hole, clear day in New York City. Saw the second plane hit, and I raced out to Naval Air Station Fort Worth, where I was flying Hornets for the reserves. I bring that up because 15 out of 19 hijackers were Saudi Arabian citizens. If 15 Americans hijacked airliners and crashed them into Mecca or whatever, they would have declared war on the United States.
Yeah, they wouldn't have declared war on Canada, though, right? It's like, what the fuck? We declared war on Iraq? I mean, a year and a half later, but whatever, right?
Yeah. No, I never understood that. Yeah. But well, you talk know, about the G...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you talk about the GWAT. Mm. We have got to talk about... First of all, the generals and admirals who essentially committed perjury for 20 years, they sat at green tables with a glass of water and said, what? Everything's great in Afghanistan. We just need more weapons and more money. Or, wait, things are really shitty now. I need a surge. There is a revolving door between the Pentagon and the defense contractors. You see a 4-star tell us one thing, and his buddies who are at Raytheon are like, hey, dude, once you retire, I got you a nice cushy VP of product development over here. I can't believe it isn't law or anything that if you're a general officer and you retire, you cannot work in the defense industry. Eisenhower was right, man. One of our only generals in our history to actually win a war. The guy saw what was coming. He saw it when he became president. He's like, uh-oh, all these companies that had to spool up to make Jeeps, aircraft carriers and airplanes. They don't want to go away anytime soon, do they? So now we're going to start creating new boogeymen. The North Korea and Vietnam, if we don't intervene there, it's going to be the domino theory and they're going to, you know, take over the rest of the world. It was all bullshit. I forget the Marine general's name, or not Smedley Butler, I think it is. This Marine general said, war is a racket.
Yeah.
It is all about, if I ever went to Congress or Senate or President, I'd drag in McChrystal, I'd drag in Petraeus, I'd repeat all their words to him. And, you know, Kabul fell in a weekend. So these generals told us the whole time, like, nah, the Afghan National Army is great, and they'll step up, and they drop their guns like cheese-eating surrender monkeys. And, you know, oh, this uniform? Let me go put my Nike shirt back on with LeBron on it. And, hey, I love the Taliban. So we have to address what's going on in this country with the Pentagon and the defense industry. That war is good for business. I thought it was a joke, man. I thought it was like the Babylon Bee. I saw a Raytheon ad that talked about how eco-friendly their brand new missile was. I'm like, or how green it was. Oh my God. So on the other end of this mist though is hair, teeth, and eyeballs, but at least we did it in a clean, environmentally friendly way. I mean, you just can't, you can't make any of this stuff on. Anybody from the rank of colonel or Navy captain below in Afghanistan knew that thing was going to end in a weekend.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, they had been by May of 2021, the Taliban had taken over 40% of the country already because we had been like kind of passively withdrawing with certain areas. And then a couple of months later, we pull Bagram and then pull Hkaya. And everybody's like, I can't believe it fell so fast. What happens? Like, well, I mean, and then the other part of that is what exactly did we expect from the Afghan soldiers who had no support after that? Like, just die. Just let them kill you because why not? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's nobody gave a fuck, right? Like, I think, honestly, I think the long-term goal for the military-industrial complex is to get involved in some other micro stuff over the next couple of fucking decades and some R&D, and then get back into Afghanistan and Iraq at some point, probably. I mean, it reminds me of the pharmaceutical industry, where there's and American politics. There's an old saying that's solved problems don't get out the vote, right? If you solve people's problems, you don't have anything to hold over them anymore. If you cure people, you don't have anybody to treat anymore. And if you solve geopolitical problems, then the military-industrial complex can't make money anymore. And it's just the same old shit. Like, it seems crazy and new to us, but every aristocracy in the history of human beings, no matter how well-intentioned in the beginning, has become an engine to extract labor and wealth from the population. That's it. It's inevitable. And that's where conservatism came from. It's like, well, we want to keep this, we don't want Somalia. So let's have a government and keep it as small as possible, diffuse centralized power down to the local level. And then that's our way of government. We haven't done that for 150 years.
Yeah. This behemoth of a federal government is just completely out of control. I mean, Reagan was right. He jokingly said, what, you know, the most dangerous words you're ever going to hear, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. We do not work for us anymore. It is definitely that equation is flipped. We work to support the federal government. It's a horror, man.
Yeah, and it's the, you know, I hear a lot of, you know, I guess hyperbole. A lot of people talking about civil war and shit that aren't in any way prepared for any type of conflict, much less a civil war. Right. And, you know, there's no geographical boundaries anymore that would define one side or the other. It doesn't work that way anymore. So any kind of situation like that would inevitably be a cross insurgency, right? So there's,
oh my God, yeah,
there's no fucking way to even fight that. So I don't know what people are talking about, to be honest.
I think people are voting with their feet, right? You know, I thank God I live in the great state of Florida, man, especially during COVID. We freaked out for about 2 weeks like everybody did in America, and then we're like, you know what, fuck it, you want to die or freak, you stay at home and wear your face diaper. So being down here in Florida is fantastic. So Texas, Florida, kind of the rally points right now, man. You can have the Northeast, you can have the left coast. It's over with.
Yeah.
And not only are they voting just because of policies, but also the economics, man. I mean, these states just hammering businesses and or talking about reparations or all sorts of stuff like this, man. Get to a good state, folks, before it's too late.
Well, the only way that certainly you want to get to a place. And this is just like day one stuff. Find a defensible position. If you feel like conflict is coming, no matter what it is, if you're walking down the street and you see a guy moving towards you aggressively, get ready to fight.
What are you going
to
do?
You know what I mean? If you see somebody that looks suspicious and you've got your family with you, get your family and get the fuck out. Right. It works from the very micro level all the way to the macro level. If you see these things happening, do your best to get into a defensible position. Right. A place where people think and feel like you do, at least on the most important stuff.
Correct.
And that's if, you know, civil strife and conflict happen, which they have since 2020. It's been, you know, off and on. People are back standing in the middle of highways and setting buildings on fire again now because of Israel and fucking Hamas. I don't give a fuck about that situation at all, to be honest. I don't want any innocent people to get killed. That's all I care about. Neither one of those countries is my country. I don't care. You know what I mean? I don't give a fuck about that. But from my perspective, the only way to take back or get back to the, the way that this country was founded, like the idea of America, which is to say individual liberty and personal entrepreneurship are the ultimate inoculation to tyrannical bullshit, is for people, for enough individuals to take personal responsibility for the world around them instead of relying on somebody else. I mean, it's the premise of this show. You can bitch and moan about your rights and wait around for somebody to secure them for you, and you're going to be a subject under their rule. Or you can fucking secure them yourself by performing the responsibilities required of you, and that's what makes you a citizen. That is your only choice now. It is literally your only choice. If you want to see, and I tell people this in their personal life as well, excuse me, there's a big disconnect between men and women and the values, or the value of each one of those people and how they project those values to the other gender, and pair bonding based on that and stuff like that, and how society revolves around that. And it's like, I see a lot of these Sigma males, black pill dudes who are like, oh, women are useless now, so I'm not even going to try. It's like, well, you're a fucking bitch. First of all, you're a quitter. But, the advice I give them is like, you articulate even just to yourself the kind of outcome you want, and then articulate the kind of man you need to be to achieve that goal, and you go and be that man, right? Even if at first it doesn't feel right, or you're forcing it or whatever the fuck, if you do it enough, you'll become that kind of man, right? That's how that works. It's practice. It's just like a fucking muscle. So that's your only option down to the individual level, and that's what makes societies great. It's G.K. Chesterton said, I've quoted this on the show probably 1,000 times now. He said that men didn't love Rome because she was great. Rome was great because the men loved her. You know what I mean? It's like, it is your responsibility to make sure this country is great. And it starts at your home, you know, and in your daily life and in your preparation for all that stuff. This episode is brought to you by ghostbed.com/drinkitbros. Ghostbed. It's the best bed in the world. It's the most comfortable sheets, pillows, the whole thing. I've got them all, man. And, you know, they wanted to extend their best possible offer to Drink It Bros. They've been with us for a very long time. So this is the email they sent us. We want Drink It Bros to get the best offer, so I updated the code for 50% site-wide. That's 50% site-wide. Use the code Drinkin' Bros, Drinkin' Bros with no G, for 50% off site-wide. Everything that you buy on this site is going to be 50% off. Again, they got the best pillows, sheets, mattresses. They got the mattress protector. If you're sloppy and spill things and you don't want to jack up your mattress, they have pretty much everything you need. They've got weighted blankets now. They've got the adjustable base, which we really like. I've got one in my home. So go to ghostbed.com/drinkitbros. Use the code drinkitbros for 50% off site-wide. And don't forget about their pay-as-you-go plan. If you're with approved credit, you're going to be able to pay this thing off over the course of 3 to 5 years for $25 to $35 a month. It's nothing. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkitbros today and use the code DRINKITBROS for 50% off. This episode is also brought to you by BlackRifleCoffee.com, the best coffee in the world. As a matter of fact, they won both the gold and bronze medal at the Golden Bean Awards this year for their exclusive coffee club entries in the elite category. So the best coffee on earth literally was Circus Bear by Black Rifle, one of their ECS. So I recommend that you go sign up for the Black Rifle Coffee Club. Use the code CITIZEN. You're going to get those points off. And, you get all the benefits for being in the coffee club. You get the free shipping. You get access to all the partner deals. You get access to the exclusive coffee club. You get access to any new products that come out before anybody else does. You know, it's a very large club that they have over there. And the coffees are premium. Every single one of them is good. You're going to get experience for you. You can do just the plain coffee club. And if you want your two bags of espresso or your two bags of silencer smooth or whatever it is you drink, you can get those two bags or one bag or whatever you want every month. Or and or rather, you can use the ECS, the Exclusive Coffee Club, and get access to some of the most premium coffees on the planet and kind of learn what it is that you like. You know what I mean? So then you can order those premium coffees from Black Rifle as well. So, and we all know they got the best branding, the best merch, and they're buddies. You know, we're all friends here. We love Black Rifle. So go to blackriflecoffee.com, sign up for the coffee club, or buy something, do whatever you want. Use the code CITIZEN, you're going to get those points off.
Dude, you nailed it. I think one of the, I'll never forget this because I was at Ground Zero, not 9/11, but Ground Zero, the financial crisis. I was helped run a volatility arbitrage firm in the Board of Trade in Chicago. And I'll never forget when all the, quote, smart money, when the shit hit the fan, man, what happened? They ran to the government. These capitalists, the smartest guys in the room, ran to D.C. and said, please bail us out. Now, at the time, I said, what are you doing? That's not capitalism. Things need to be able to fail, right? But this was around the beginning of Obama with the everybody gets a trophy, right? Nobody, you know, there isn't any first, second, third place. It's all one trophy. And I'll never forget when the Occupy Wall Street stuff started happening. Initially, I was like, what a bunch of fucking hippie freaks, man. And then I'm like, wait, they got a point. Why? And the same thing happened with COVID. We saw all these people getting these massive bailouts. And I'm like, I got buddies who own restaurants in Fort Lauderdale that went out of business. I'm like, why? How are you bailing out financial companies? So, you know, and who picks the winners and losers? Last year, Silicon Valley Bank failed, right? Out in, stay with me, Silicon Valley. Bunch of limousine liberals. Every bank you go into, what's it say on the front door? The FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, insures deposits under 250 grand in this bank. Meaning, if you got over 250 grand in here, you know, there's some risk. That bank failed. What did Janet Yellen and this administration do? They went in and bailed everybody. Why? It's Silicon Valley and they're all limousine liberal voters. So our society, to your point, has really flipped. We are looking up to government to, quote, take care of us, man. What happened with the hurricane, what's his name, in New Orleans? People like waiting to be rescued or whatever. I'm like, are you people insane? 911, if you're dialing 911, needing a cop, they're minutes away, man, when you probably needed to act on your own. So I'm glad you said those. The two biggest words are personal responsibility. As you know, former military guys, we get that. One of the funniest things I had to deal with transitioning from a fighter squadron to a Wall Street firm was the lack of accountability, right? In the military, what do we call it? A SPA. Single point of accountability. There's somebody in charge, somebody with 51% of the vote. I remember there was we had a problem getting some quotes from the Philadelphia Exchange to our traders, lost a couple million bucks. And the partners were like, hey, Wiz, go, what's that thing you call them? Like, it's a debrief. They're like, oh, yeah, go debrief with our tech directors and figure out what happened. So I get in a room after the market closes. There's some Ukrainians, some Chinese guys, these like eight tech directors. I'm like, okay, who's in charge of getting quotes from the PhilX to our floor? Crickets. I'm like, maybe they don't understand English. So I said it again. I'm like, who out of you is in charge of getting quotes from the PhilX to our traders? Science. And finally one dude's like, well, I kind of do this, and then he does that and she does that. And I'm like, stop talking. What the fuck? I'm like, whose throat am I going to choke or back am I going to pat if something fails or succeeds? And they looked at me, man, like that was the strangest thing they had ever heard. So whether it's in business or in life, if you, first of all, you need to be your own worst critic, man. As a fighter, you know, I got to fly with the Blue Angels one time, but they do the same thing we do. After we get back from a mission, you and I would, if you and I went out and did a dogfight, we get into a room, we'd take the name tags off, the rank off, and we are fucking brutal with each other, right? If somebody was a fly on the wall looking at us, they're like, oh my God, those two hate each other. We don't. We know you are capable of doing better. And if you fucked up on this mission, you're going to hear about it. But before I point that out to you, at least in the aviation side, you get a chance to go around the room. As soon as I got into that room, I'd unzip my flight suit a little bit and go, hey, man, here's what I know. I fucked up on this mission. A, B, C, D. What do you got for me? So you're allowed to self-identify first. So it's funny when I try and teach that concept of debriefing to business firms, they're like, oh my God, how's that? I'm like, hey man, if you're the leader, you get into the debriefing room and you lead with you first. And it was so hard to have these corporate people like, I can't admit that I was wrong. I'm like, well, you see, that's part of the problem. Because your entire team knows that you screwed up and you're not going to admit it. So that was a long rant. But what I'm getting at is the personal accountability. In the military, we had single points of accountability. And in the business world, they have multiple points of accountability, you know, at least on the Navy side. And I use this example all the time. If the commanding officer of an aircraft carrier is sleeping on the treadmill or eating with some sailors and the ship runs aground, gets fired. The commanding officer. And people are like, well, that's not fair. I'm like, no. As the admiral firing the skipper, I'd be like, you should have spent last time sleeping or on the treadmill or eating with your sailors and training people to drive the boat. You're gone. So people are like, wow. So that culture of accountability is so lacking in this country. Yeah. Everybody else is to blame.
And it starts from the very lowest level too. It's like, you say, be your own worst critic, and people will take that in a negative way. But it's not. It's a very positive thing, actually. And it's to make sure that you're operating at as high level as possible, right?
Be firm.
And then in the same vein, I think, you know, with regard to, you know, all the nonsense that's going on these days, you should be deeply suspicious of anything that seems right or obvious to you, because confirmation bias is so strong. And it's only getting stronger now because there's so much noise and miss or disinformation these days. It's just easier to say, well, no, that's not right. My view is right. Whether it's pride of authorship or that's the way it's always been done or whatever. It's hard to explain that to people that haven't been in legit life or death situations. Like, there's no room for conjecture here. Like, we need the fucking facts. So
facts.
When something's wrong, it's like, all of you get bonuses and all of you have job descriptions. This act that did not get accomplished, whose bullet is that? Who is it on your job description? Is it on your resume? Is it on your bonus review? Right? Because if it's you, then you are responsible for that. And then the two people above you are also responsible for that because they didn't do their fucking jobs.
Correct. Dude, I'm glad you used the word facts. I'm going to delete that and replace it with truth. There's only one truth. And who was that? What's her name? Oh, the Claudine Gay lady from Harvard.
No.
This is awesome. When she fell on her sword, of course, too late, she's like, I failed in explaining my truth. And the Wall Street Journal had a great article like, there ain't no my truth. There's only truth. Hell, the motto of Harvard is veritas, truth. So I think a lot of people are running around this country nowadays with, this is my truth. I'm like, dude, that ain't the truth. Trust me. Everybody's running around with a different version of the truth. And that's where you get a lot of the conflict coming in. The other thing, man, is this. To your point, people live in echo chambers. Thank God for Elon Musk owning X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it. I think I lost 3 or 4 Twitter accounts and a couple Facebook accounts during the COVID fiasco, man. I just got clipped and clipped and clipped. And guess who ended up being right about everything I had posted? So these people live in these echo chambers where they just surround themselves. It's a self-licking ice cream cone, man. They just they sit with their own narrative. You and I are smart enough to go, if everybody's thinking alike, somebody ain't thinking. You've done this with what you've done in the military, and we do this on the aviation side too, is a red team.
Oh yeah.
If I'm planning to go drop some bombs, if you and I were planning together and we got done a couple hours of planning, we'd look at each other and go, dude, we're freaking brilliant. Let's go blow people up. And we'd go, wait, stop. We'd go get a couple squadron mates who have SA as to what we're doing, but they weren't in our planning.
Yeah.
I'd bring them in, I'd sit them down and I go, fellas, here's what I'm doing. What do you got for me? And they go, and they rip it to shreds. Did you think about this? And they become the enemy. If you don't red team your plan before you execute it, who's going to do it for you?
Yeah.
The fucking enemy.
I mean, that's one of the most, like,
if
you're a guy that's operating, if you're a combat person, pilot, mission planner, operator, infantry person, and you're looking to start a new career, a consultancy is a good idea for you because most people don't know how to do that. Most people don't know Most people don't know how to dispassionately look at a plan and a set of circumstances and say, and just pick it apart. And you know, I mean, and look, you're going to have to learn some communication skills. You can't just call everybody an asshole and knife hand them and shit, right? In the corporate world. But having that ability to fucking carve stuff up, because we do it. I mean, even in the infantry, we do it relatively politely. We'll call dudes assholes and stuff, but it's like we have a format that makes sense, that reinforces good habits, which is sustain, improve, sustain, right? So it's like, here are some things we did well. Here's some stuff we fucked up that we need to improve on, but here's some stuff that we did well as well, right? So you cushion it. Not cushion's not the right word, because you're not trying to hide it in anything, but you make sure that you focus on the positive stuff. Like, this is the standard. The positive stuff you did was right. Bring everything else up to that level, right? That's the point. And you got to do that in your fucking personal life too. You know what I mean? How you do anything is how you do everything. If you're walking by that same pile of laundry every day, or that same shit on the ground outside of your house, just walking past it and choosing to ignore it all the time, then when you go out into the world, you're going to choose to ignore those people that need help. You're going to choose to ignore those windows that are broken. And that's what leads to societal decay. That
you got
personal responsibility of just picking up that fucking piece of garbage will make the difference.
I have a saying, you know, along with debriefing, talking to the business world, red teaming, you would have thought I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. But I have a term that I tell people: if you're going to throw a knife, make sure you have a note attached to it, so you don't just, you know, red team to because you're that asshole. It's, I'm throwing this at you, but there's a note attached to it, right? And it is about making somebody better. You know, one of the things we said about the debrief in a fighter squadron is it ain't personal; it's professional. Right. We're trying to make each other better. Those Blue Angels, they'd rip each other to shreds, and then door opens up and they're all best friends again. Right. Because you have to. If I don't trust you, how can I trust you with my life, let alone, you know, stuff in general?
Yeah.
And it goes to the little things like you just alluded to, walking by stuff or anything like that. My kids know if they're not 15 minutes early to somewhere, they're late. One of the toughest things I had to do when I went to that firm in Chicago, I'm like, hey man, we have a meeting at 9 o'clock in the boardroom. At 9 o'clock, the door was locked, and the partners were like, "Hey, what's going on?" I'm like, "Hey man, at 0900, I start talking, right? In a fighter squadron, if you weren't sitting in that seat at least 15 minutes early, how can I trust you to put a bomb through a window plus or minus 2 seconds if you can't make it to the brief on time?" So it's the little things. That's why, you know, the Blue Angels or fighter pilots will debrief the minutia, because if you can't get the minutia right, you ain't going to get the bigger stuff right.
Yeah. Aim small, miss small. It's like you have to be able to trust these people on your right and left, not just to do their job, but to be realistic about their capabilities and improve those capabilities. Improve and maintain constantly. It's like that movie, The Other Guys. That movie, The Other Guys, where The Rock and Sam Jackson jump off the fucking building and think they're going to land in the bushes. That's hyperbole. It's obviously, you know, a comedy and stuff, but it plays in real life too. Somebody that's like, oh, I'm a gamer. I'll be there on game day. Don't worry about me. It's like, no, you won't. You definitely won't. It's nonsense.
Well, we had a saying, you know, up at Top Gun, there's a saying, you fight like you train and you train like you fight. So yeah, if you ain't putting it in right now, you ain't going to do it when the chips are down.
Yeah. So I don't know if we've ever had a Top Gun person on, definitely not on this show, but I don't know if we had one on Drinker Bros either before. What's it like?
Way to lower your average, man.
Yeah. What's it like there? I mean, you know, obviously it's not as much Tom Cruise as anybody would like, but,
Oh God, no.
Unfortunately.
I mean, Yeah. So I don't even like saying that I flew quote combat sorties over Iraq, because they were without a doubt the most boring flying I've done in my career. The toughest flying I did was up at Top Gun, and it makes sense, right? Because if we go anywhere in the world and we suck or we're surprised, we failed, right? So we call it going to the mountain. When you go to Fallon, Nevada, beautiful garden spot, right? So they booted Top Gun out of San Diego after the tailhook fiasco and sent us up to the middle of the desert. Top Gun's tough. I went through the adversary course. So I was a bad guy, because we need to present the good guys with bad guy profile. So I had to know, not only did I have to know everything about the F-18 Hornet, I had to know everything about a MiG-29 or an Su-37, all the missile ranges. We had to know all of our threat, you know, how they do their air-to-air work. And it's pretty intense. And on the ground, you know, some alphabet agencies in our government go and acquire, quote unquote, all of the enemy's radar systems. So when we do a strike going into Fallon, you know, there's a big airfield there with, you know, airplanes on there and tanks and, you know, a live weapons range. You're going to see on your displays, if you're getting lit up by, you know, an SA-6 or whatever, it's the legit, no kidding stuff. They even have like Smoky Sams. You know, you look down and, you know, there's bottle rockets coming up on you. So it's pretty intense. But yeah, there ain't no fly by the tower and any of that. You'd be gone. They'd pull your wings. That's just it was awful. I mean, my good buddy Brian Ferguson was the technical advisor. The Navy sent him orders for 2 years to Paramount Studios, and the story was without a doubt the dumbest thing that I've ever seen. The only reason I give it, you know, 2.5 stars is because they actually flew, right? So they threw all those actors in the back of Hornets, and they, you know, them passing out is them passing out. So at least they did that and got it pretty realistic. But I thought it was kind of funny that currently Top Gun sucks so bad that you got to call a 60-year-old out of retirement to come in. So yeah, our current crop of Top Gun graduates suck.
Yeah.
They're all sensitive new age pilots.
A 60-year-old that wears high heels has got better reaction time than a 30-year-old, right? That's fresh out of
That might actually be true, man, based on everything you and I are talking about, unfortunately.
Tom Cruise is probably on all the gas, right? Because he looks like he's fucking 40 still.
He is. He puts in the work too, man. Yeah. So.
And those are good. Those movies are good recruitment tools. I mean, I don't know how many Navy SEALs are Navy SEALs because of fucking Charlie Sheen, to be honest.
Correct.
And that movie was kind of retarded too, frankly. I mean.
Oh, that was looking back on that.
I mean, some of the stuff made sense. Like going to the golf course, getting your car impounded and then stealing it back from the impound. That would happen for sure. But the mission prep and stuff was dumb as hell. And there's the idea that there's some, I don't know, like a cowboy hotshot on a fucking DevGru team. That's like, these are the most professional motherfucker. Tier one operators are the most professional people in the world. They don't get their ego doesn't get people killed ever. So whatever. No. Anyways, it was still a recruiting tool though.
Correct. Yeah. Well, and you know, Lone Survivor, obviously with Marcus, or you know, American Sniper and all that type of stuff that didn't hurt back when we'd show patriotic movies, man. But yeah, same thing in a fighter squadron. People are like, you know, the Maverick attitude. I'm like, dude, they'd be gone. They, you know, we have HFBs, human factors boards, where they sit there and they go through each pilot and they talk about it like it's a soap opera. And if there's anything going on, you're done.
Yeah.
They'll clip you or they'll put you on a ground job. So you're right. It's good for recruitment. That's why the Navy bends over backwards to help with this stuff. But I don't mind telling people what it's really like instead of just the movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is what it is. Like, it's Hollywood, so don't take it too seriously.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Exactly.
It's
a business.
When you got out of the Navy, worked in finance for a long time, you're still working in finance to some degree, right?
Yeah, I teach people how to trade. I have a company called Top Gun Options. I do a live trade brief every day. People log in and watch me kind of manage my own positions and stuff like that.
Sweet.
It's fun.
And the way that we got hooked up, although we float in the same circles, but the way we got hooked up was through your foundation. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so the No Fallen Heroes Foundation, you know, and I alluded to, I had some kind of a crappy childhood, took that stuff into the military, right? Took that trauma into the military. And when I was flying fighters for 15 years, I lost 16 16 guys, not one combat loss. Mechanical, weather, stupidity, more stupidity, more weather, more mechanical. Just 16 bros, man, gone. And along the way, I lost three F-18 buddies due to suicide, including one of my groomsmen, Eric Swenson, Swede. Beautiful wife, five kids, gone. So I said, you know, around 2020, I said, I gotta do something. I mean, 22, back then it was 22 a day. We know that number's more or less a lie, according to the University of Alabama and Duke University, who say it's closer to 44. Because Uncle Sam was only counting violent deaths. Former staff sergeant sits in a parking lot of the VA, blows his head off, violent death. But you know as well as I do, a lot of guys drink themselves to death, and gals, or drugs. So when those two universities dug into the numbers, they're like, no, man. So that really sucked. I didn't know what I was going to do. I started, you know, big marketing department, Top Gun Fighter Foundation. I'm like, I'll call it Top Gun Fighter Foundation to do something. I don't know. What do you do to stop veteran suicide? Resumes, buy suits. I didn't fucking know what I was going to do. So right around that time, an operator, as you alluded to, you know, reached out to me. He's like, hey, man, there's a group of guys, SEALs and other special forces guys that go down to Mexico and they do psychedelic assisted therapy, and they have a pretty cool group going in a couple weeks. Would you be up for it? And I looked at him and I said, man, going to Mexico to do drugs with Navy SEALs, sign me the fuck up, man. That sounds like a fun week. I had no idea what I was doing, man. No idea what I was in for. So went to San Diego. Met Marcus Luttrell, met JT, an NFL player who was suffering from horrific CTE, and then also another veteran Navy SEAL who was good buddies with Marcus. And we drove an hour south to the Mission Within, and I'll give you the cliff notes, man. It was without a doubt the most spiritual and transformative experience of my life. I'd say 20 to 30 years of healing in a weekend. It was just, it was incredible. I got to experience my father who had passed away, my sister. I just healed everything that more or less was wrong with my life. And it just, I learned an SAT word after I got back, ineffable, right? You can't put it into words. So I can't even explain more or less what happened, but I got back from that trip and I said, done. This is how I'm going to help end veteran suicide. So change the name from cheesy Top Gun Fighter Foundation to the No Fallen Heroes Foundation, because you're a hero to somebody, man. First of all, you should be a hero to yourself, but you're a hero to somebody. My dad was my hero. You know, everybody's a hero, man, even though we will never call ourselves that, but I guarantee you, you are. And I wanted to open up the tent a little bit, because there was foundations like, hey, we're SEALs only, or hey, we're only combat vets. I'm like, hey, man, I didn't see horrible shit, but I have a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
So we opened up the doors to vets, first responders as well, because a lot of guys or gals, they take off that uniform and they don't take off the traumas. And then they go put on a state uniform or a local uniform and, you know, as a cop or a first responder or something like that. So veterans, first responders, and then obviously their families, man. You know, 99.9% of my beautiful bride's trauma is whiz induced. So we provide healing grants to those groups to heal their trauma. So we were going to Costa Rica. We were going to Mexico. And I am proud to report that we hit one of my biggest mission objectives, which was to heal our heroes at home, man. Sneaking off to Costa Rica and Mexico to heal trauma that you incurred serving this country made me furious. We did our first healing retreat in the end of October in the great state of Colorado, because in Oregon and Colorado, these healing medicines are legal at the state level. So we did some great work, man. One of the first responders we helped in Colorado was one of the first guys in the door at the Columbine massacre. He was in the library. He just looked like shit, man, carrying the weight of the world on him. And then we had an Army medevac pilot who also just a shitload of trauma. And, man, seeing them pull up to this place, this retreat center, or the ranch, Friday morning and then leaving, you know, Monday afternoon, completely different human beings. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
So that's my main focus right now is putting the ladder down to help. And this ain't for everybody, man. I think twice in my life I tried to do a forward flip as a kid into the pool, and I always landed on my back. And you can ask JT. He's got a funny story about this. On the 5-MeO DMT, I flipped in the bed. It was an exorcism. I exploded into love, light, energy, and I flipped. I don't remember flipping, but I remember waking up and I was facing the Pacific when I went into the medicine. And when I got out, I was facing the wall. So these medicines aren't for everybody, right? I like to say that, you know, a lot of veterans, pretty radical trauma. Mm. These are potentially radical healing, but you can heal anyway, man. You can fucking yoga, breath work, meditation, climb to the mountain in Mount Everest. So there are so many ways to heal. This was my way to heal. Sure. And I'll be the first one to tell you, I was a drinker. Mm. And I don't know if you can be a good drinker. I was a drinker. A little bit of drug use too. Man, for 6-8 months after I got home, looking at alcohol or even smelling it made me gag. It made me physically sick. Now I can have a, you know, glass of wine with my steak type of thing, but old me, a glass of wine with my steak was a bottle of Cab and maybe two to keep it going. So it was a complete system reset for me, and it gave me my life back. And it was, you know, it was interesting because I got home and, you know, my bride's like, who are you? Oh, my God. And so there was a little tension, right? Because as I alluded to, you know, 99.9% of my wife's trauma is me induced. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm forgiven. Everything's great. Get up. Let's go. Let's have a great time the rest of our lives. And she was kind of like, well, yay for you, man.
Yeah.
So what about me? So she went down about 2 or 3 months after I did with a couple Navy SEAL wives, I think a Gold Star wife or some Ranger wives. And she sat with the medicine. And we've never been a better couple. I've never been a better human being or father or husband. So it really did save and change my life. So my mission objective is to try and help as many people who this calls to. Doesn't call to you, it ain't calling to you. If it is, it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the hippies had it right. Sort of, right?
They did.
They just didn't have a purpose. You know what I mean?
Correct.
If that psychedelic wave in the 60s and 70s had been married with purpose, I think we would be living in a much different world than we do right now, to be honest.
I'll tell you, man, old Wiz, I would have swam across the Atlantic by now to kill as many Hamas and Russian soldiers as I could get my hands on. New Wiz, what are we doing? Stop fucking killing each other, man.
Yeah.
You know, on the medicines, I saw nothing but souls, like white and white, killing each other. I'm like, what the fuck? Are you insane? God, you know, whatever word you want to use, God, truth, source, divine, put us on this place to fucking love and enjoy and be happy. And so it can be a little heavy, the medicine work, man. I got home, you know, the first 30 days, they call it the pink cloud phase. Like, my wife's like, dude, what are you doing in the yard looking at a tree? I'm like, look at the fucking tree, man. It's the coolest thing in the world. Yeah. The second month home was a little tough. I'm like, look at that homeless guy, man. That guy's me. That literally could be me. Or why is there a war? Why is there a war in the Middle East or in Ukraine? So it was a little tough too, you know, doing the medicine, because it kind of breaks things down. And I've been telling people these medicines have the potential to turn warriors into peacemakers. Mm. Hence why they might still be illegal in the United States, you know?
Yeah,
so that's a whole separate discussion, man. Well, when they initially did the knee-jerk reaction in the late 60s and 70s, it was like, wait a minute, you took this medicine and you don't want to go to Asia and kill North Vietnamese? You're anti-American or subversive.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's been incredibly rewarding, man. If I'm not on a retreat, I'll get a text or phone call. Wiz, I don't want to kill myself anymore. So it's just, I could not be more happy to be doing what I'm doing. And I there's a chart right now, man. There's a chart of the United States and the world going straight down into a nosedive. And here's the rise of people trying to heal and use some of the stuff that God put on this planet. So hopefully, you know, this chart can intercept the downward spiral.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the last thing that a war complex machine wants is warriors with perspective, right?
Correct. They want robots.
They're going to say no, right? And that's like one of the good things about having an all-volunteer army is that you have to continuously prove the merit of your cause to get people to sign up.
Correct.
yep. With regard to plant stuff, we have a severe hardware and software issue with not just vets, but a lot of people, right? And for the most part, everything the military's done, or the VA, or most foundations, has addressed one or the other. Even traditional therapy, while they use SSRIs and shit, we now know that those are more or less useless, if not harmful, right? And so they at least were trying to solve both issues, but it's a wide array of things these days, like hormone issues and traumatic brain injury and activated amygdala issues and things like that. All compound, like whatever you've got going on psychologically, those three things plus a lack of sleep, it doesn't matter how much therapy you do, you're going to be fucked for the rest of your life if you don't solve
those issues. Nutrition and exercise too, man. People are eating crap. Yeah. We're obese and people don't know what the inside of a gym looks like, man. It's all a downward spiral.
It wasn't until relatively recently with your organization, with vets, a couple of other Marcus Capone and a couple of other organizations where people started to have the option of doing both. And I still think we've got some ways to go. I've been trying to pressure people in the DOD the past couple of years to have a mandatory hormone test for everybody in the military. Every male, at least. I don't know how it's affecting females, but every adult male in the military needs to have their testosterone checked, like immediately. And if they're low, they need to be brought up to the correct level, 700 to 800, somewhere in that range. If you're 25 years old, cruising around with a fucking 300 test level, you're going to be miserable as fuck. Correct. It's just the way it is. It's almost like when you have some kind of mechanical issue in your brain. Everything's going well in your life, but you're still depressed. Those people are more prone to suicide than people in abject poverty, right? Because they don't understand why the fuck stuff sucks. Everything's going well. Why does it suck? I guess it's just always going to be like this. There's nothing I can do. Boom. Right.
Correct.
So we have to solve this hardware issue. Plant stuff does it a lot like better. The stellate ganglion block will get you. It'll put some distance between you and that issue for some time, but 6 months maybe, right? Depends on how fast you metabolize the product.
Correct.
Until you start getting energy back into the dead parts of your brain, if you have CTE or traumatic brain injury, and until you start remapping neural pathways from the amygdala to the prefrontal cortex and back, then you no amount of therapy you do, no circumstance improvement in your life is going to fucking fix what's wrong with you. You have to fix the hardware first. Otherwise, none of this other shit is going to matter. So what I want to see are more of these, because these men's health clinics are popping up all over the place. What I want to see is an integrated plant medicine men's health thing, right, where peptides and testosterone are used to bring people back to the physiological level they're supposed to be at to function as normal human beings. And then use the plants to deal with the brain specifically, right? And to be
great
honest,
idea.
To be after that, with improvements in nutrition and exercise, after that, I'm not sure how much therapy is even going to be necessary. To be honest, like the beautiful thing about DMT specifically, and I try to like people say, well, what's it like? And you can explain like the kaleidoscope and the feeling of. Just being completely out of control and all this bullshit. But really what DMT does is it forces you to ask and answer questions that you've been avoiding, right? You will ask yourself, like, whatever topic is on your mind will pop up and you will work your way through that problem. And it is working your way through that problem is almost a metaphor for swimming upstream so you can get back on the shore, right? That's basically how it works. If you're physiologically tuned up and healthy and shit, and you use this stuff, your brain will fucking take care of itself, in my opinion.
Correct.
Now, the odd person may need some additional talk therapy to learn coping skills and personality management and learn how. But again, a lot of the stuff you can still do yourself. Just find ways to challenge yourself and delay gratification. And that stuff also kind of takes care of itself. It all comes back to you doing the work, though.
Agreed.
So I'm hoping something like that materializes.
I like it, man. The integrated approach. And if you don't integrate, it was just an experience, right? Doc Martin down at the Mission Within gave me a ratio. He's like, Wiz, because I'm like, I'm healed. Everything's great. He's like, dude, 5% is the medicine. 95% is the integration. Mm. You go home and you go back into your bad habits and everything like that. It was just an experience. And it could actually be bad because you kind of saw what could have been or what it's supposed to be. And now you're not making it happen and you're going to self-destruct. So you're right, man. Like live, laugh, love. Mm. Mind, body, and soul, man. If these three things ain't great, I don't care if you're the most jacked guy in the world. If your mind and soul ain't right, who cares about your body?
Yeah.
It's mind, body, and soul, man. And if they're not in alignment, you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yep. Well, look, this has been a great conversation. I got to get out of here today. But
you bet.
Tell everybody where they can find you, where they can find your programs if they need assistance with that, whether it's the finance stuff or the
plan. Yeah, man. So. Absolutely. Yeah. You can go to nofallenheroes.com. If you know somebody, if you need help or you know of a vet that needs help or first responder, go to contact us on the No Fallen Heroes site. And there's a sponsorship intake form. We're actually this year, we're going to roll out because there's a lot of civilians that are looking for this treatment. I'm like, hey, how about you sponsor a vet? If you're going to go through treatment, why don't you bring a buddy? I'm going to hook you up with a squadron mate, and this person is going to be the best friend for the rest of your life. Because the guys I did the medicine with, JT and Marcus, we check in all the time. I mean, you will be lifelong friends with these people. So if you are a civilian, we can help you out too. We're just going to ask, maybe you can pony up a little bit extra to help the ladder down to pull somebody along, a veteran or a first responder or family member. You can follow us on Instagram. Obviously, No Fallen Heroes. And yeah, if you're interested in finance, man, topgunoptions.com, and I'll teach you how to trade. Trading's a form of combat to me, man. Somebody's going to win and somebody's going to get their ass kicked. Why wouldn't you use the stuff that you and I just talked about, red teaming, debriefing? I just applied that to my trading and it worked pretty damn well. So, but I appreciate you having me, bro. This has been awesome.
Yeah, for sure. We'll do it again sometime. I think you're on Drinking Bros in a couple of weeks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Looking forward to that.
We'll see you soon. Thanks for coming today, man. I really appreciate it.
All right, brother. God bless, man. I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
You too. Thank you all for listening. This has been Citizen.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.